Hello, and welcome to the Mindful World Parenting Summit. I am your host, Dr. Stacey Thomas. Most people call me Dr. Stacey, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined today by Sarah Rosensweet. Sarah is a certified peaceful parenting coach, speaker, and educator, and the parenting advice columnist for Canada's Globe and Mail newspaper. She lives in Toronto with her husband and three big kids, ages 13, 16, and 19. And Sarah is truly an expert that helps parents use a non-punitive, connection-based approach that includes a combination of firm limits and lots of empathy. Sarah works one-on-one virtually with parents all over the world to help them go from frustrated and overwhelmed to, we've got this. Thank you, Sarah, for being here. Welcome to the summit.
Thank you so much, Stacey, for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, we need you. We so need you at this time, especially during this pandemic, which we were just talking about how it seems to have functioned to turn the volume up on all the things, good, bad, the otherwise. And so today, I'm really excited to talk to you, actually, about the family, like especially between siblings. Like, you have a number of children, there's different ages, different needs. And I know for myself that there's times when, especially during this pandemic with a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, the negotiation is through the roof, and a lot of times it does fall apart. So what I'm hoping you can share with us today is some tips, some real tips on how we can go from, you know, help our children stop fighting with each other, first of all, and be more peaceful with each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm finding that kids are, you know, they're spending so much more time with each other than they're used to because they're not at school or daycare, and they're not seeing their friends generally. And so it's definitely, I mean, I have heard some parents say their kids are getting along better than ever, but I also, the majority I've heard saying, oh, they're fighting all the time. It's driving me crazy. I don't know what to do. So I think this is a great topic to support.
Okay. Yes. Thank you so much. So tell me, like, what would be, is there a mindset that we should be adopting that will help with this whole thing from the start?
Yeah. I mean, well, I say two mindsets. One is that, you know, we always say this in peaceful parenting, they're doing the best they can, right? Like, if they could do better, they would do better. So really making sure that you're approaching any, you know, conflict or situation with that in mind, it always helps us stay more patient and compassionate, whether it's with our partner or, you know, anyone who's being challenging. If we remember that they're doing the best they can, our natural way of being as humans is to be close and connected with each other. And if we're not, then there's something going on, right, that's preventing that. And then I think the other is to remember that with siblings, you know, especially, you know, I think it can be especially hardest for the oldest child, who really every older child experiences the birth of a sibling as being replaced, right? Like, there's a grieving and a sadness and a fear of, you know, am I going to get my needs met? Do they still love me? And, you know, sometimes that can really, you know, sometimes kids, you know, I would be happy to go out on a limb and say every older child feels that way, like full stop. And sometimes that gets processed away and they get over it and, you know, everything goes great. And sometimes that can turn into a real resentment of the younger sibling. So I think we need to really keep that in mind when there are any sibling challenges, that, you know, it's possible that your child's still going through that depending on how old they are. And it's also possible that this old resentment that happened when their younger sibling was born never got resolved. So I think it's just, I hear a lot of parents who say, oh, but he's being so mean, right? Like, and they worry about their older child. They think that they're like a bad seed or something. And really, you know, remember what we just said, they're doing the best they can. And remember how there could be unresolved issues, feeling replaced, feeling not good enough, fear that that's really coming into play here.
I so hear that on so many levels as you're saying that. One of the phrases for me as oldest child, I heard often.
I'm an oldest too.
Yeah. You know what? There's a lot of us in the helping world, a lot of high achieving people who are the eldest, overly responsible. And, you know, the phrase is, you need to learn to accommodate. You need to learn to accommodate. And, you know, there is some truth to that, but then there's the balance is sometimes that kid doesn't have their needs met, the accommodation for them and the recognition that they're having to give up something in order to allow for this system to work.
Totally. And I think that sometimes we expect too much from our small children because they look so big compared to the new baby or the two-year-old or whatever. You know, and you're getting to the point where you can realize like how little four was or whatever, but some people who are really still in that, four looks so big compared to two, but four looks really small compared to 13 or 16 or 19, I can tell you.
And so with that in mind, right, that both children, or, you know, it could be several children, depending. I mean, this is so interesting because we know that each child experiences, like, it's almost like they're all in a different family, the same people, but their experiences of the family, depending on their role, is very different. And so it sounds like for the parents, taking a moment to think about the unique challenges of each child in the order of the family.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think that it's not uncommon to have one child that has bigger needs than another child. And that's not always the oldest child. You know, maybe you, you have, like, my neighbors across the street talk about how when their first child was born, they were so smug as parents because they thought they were going to make such a good job because they could take their daughter to restaurants and, like, wherever. And she was so easy. And then they had their second child. Like, boy, were we wrong. Like, it had nothing to do with us. So sometimes I think we have to recognize that that one child may have bigger needs than the other. And I talk to a lot of parents who have real guilt about that. You know, I spend 70% of my time and energy on this one child, and I feel so bad because I don't spend the same time and energy on the other child. And I always say we have to, with siblings, we have to think in terms of equity versus equality. You know, is your older child getting their needs met? And, or you're not your older, your easier child. Is your easier child getting their needs met? And if they are, then that's great. And it's okay that you spend more time and energy on your child who has the bigger needs, right? Like that's okay. We don't need to feel guilty about that.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Okay. And so let's get into the nitty gritty of it. Like, the explosion is happening. They're like at each other.
Yeah.
And what to do in that situation?
Okay. I want you to remember these two words. Be Switzerland. We have to be neutral in our children's arguments, right? Mm-hmm. We have to, even if we think we know what happened, even if we think we know who's at fault, if we go in with this judge and jury attitude, no matter what we do, we're going to be increasing sibling rivalry. So, first of all, we don't always know what happened, even if we think we do. We could have missed the younger sibling going, like that, just before we started paying attention to what was going on. And we do need to intervene, however, because I've heard some parents say, well, I was told that we should just let them work it out themselves. What happens when we really let kids, when we, quote, let them work it out themselves, is either we get physical violence, where, you know, it devolves into a brawl. Or we get that the one child, the dominant child, and it's not always the older child who's the dominant child, they always get their way. And the other child learns, why even bother? Because I can't, you know, I never win against this one sibling, or they always, you know, they give in because they don't want to fight or whatever. So we really need to think about, we do need to intervene, but we need to intervene in a way that's neutral, where we're helping the children talk to each other, right? So, you know, you hear a fight. I mean, if you want, I can give you kind of like a little role play.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
So you hear a fight happening. You go in and you say, like, whoa, guys, I hear two kids having a problem here. What's going on? Right. So you say, I hear a problem, or I see a problem, not, oh, you just hate your brother or whatever. Right. You just say, like generally, like, I see a problem. It seems like you guys are having a really hard time. And what ideally you've talked to your kids about this, the new approach that you're going to take beforehand, so that they know what to expect.
Okay.
But what you want to do is you want to go in and you want to go in with a problem solving lens of helping them talk to each other. So you say, you know, okay, everybody's going to get a turn to talk. I want to hear what happened. I want to hear what's going on. And so sibling A says, well, he, blah, blah, you know, I was playing with that, and then he came over and took it, and I wasn't done with it. And then you say, whoa, that does sound hard. okay, sibling B, what happened? Well, I thought she was done. And, you know, like, so you get, you hear both sides, you make sure each child has a chance to say what, you know, what their version of the events are, and you just listen, right? And then you can kind of mirror back to them. So it sounds like blah, blah, blah happened. And you say the other, and it sounds like blah, blah, blah. Do I have this right, you guys? Like, you know, you want to just make sure that everybody gets heard, because that's actually feeling heard and acknowledged is actually the first step in helping people calm down, right? Like, you want them to make sure everybody's heard, right? Everybody gets heard here. And then you don't, this is where a lot of parents fall down, which is they say, okay, well, this is the solution then. You're going to have this, and then you're going to do this, right? We don't want to do that. Mm. What we want is to say, that does sound like a problem, you know, and you can also reassure them, don't worry, we're going to work this out. And I love to say something like, because we're a family that always works things out, right? Because there's anxiety happening about, well, will this get solved, right? So, you know, you hear kids, this is a tiny tangent, but I think it's helpful. I hate him, right? You hear kids say, I hate him. And hate is a fear that you're never going to work things out, right? Hate is a fear that you're never going to be able to solve the problem. So really, I think it's helpful to, you know, don't worry, we're going to work this out. And then you ask for solutions. And I know people are always thinking like, oh, this sounds like it's going to take a really long time. and no, you can't do this every single time. But the more you do this, this is basically, we're doing conflict negotiation, right? We're doing like problem solving and conflict negotiation. And the more you can do it, the more you're teaching your kids and scaffolding them to do it on their own, right? So what you say is, who has an idea for how we can solve this problem? When you first start, you're going to get ideas like, well, I should just have it, right? Or he should just go away. Like those really one-sided solutions that aren't really a solution. And then you say, interesting idea. You know, how does that sit with you, sibling A? You know, no, that doesn't work for you. Okay, sounds like we're going to have to keep going until we can find a solution that works for everybody, right? So the beauty of this is, kids often, when they are coming up with their own ideas for solutions, they think of things that we would never think of, right? Like they come up with things that we would never think of, and they accept things that they wouldn't accept if we thought of it. Like I remember this one story from a mom that I worked with who said that she was doing this with her kids, and they were fighting over who got to be the front of a like cardboard box train that they were making. Like they both wanted to be the engine. And one of the brothers said, I have an idea. This train can have two engines. And they both went, yeah, yeah, great idea. But if the mom had come in and said, why don't you have the train have two engines, right? They would have said, no way. So the fact that, you know, we're intervening, we're listening to each child, making them feel heard, and then we're asking for solutions that work for everybody really empowers them to come up with their own ideas that they are invested in, right? They're invested in the solution when they come up with it.
No, I'm listening. That was lots, but you know what? I'm listening to you and I'm just like, this is like really good psychology in terms of empathy makes it go, and that we respect that these children have some ideas, and we're empowering them to come up with ideas. And I'm just thinking like, if we could be doing this more now as adults, right? Yeah. How much more peace would there be in the world, 100%. Right?
Yeah. Right. And I just want to like add even more what happens when we don't do this is when we go in and we're siding with one sibling over the other. You know, I mentioned before, even if we think we're right, and even if we're careful to never play favorites, you know, we think we're being 50-50 on the justice, you know, handing down, it always increases sibling rivalry because the rivalry is always about love and, you know, getting your needs met and feeling, you know, feeling important and seen by your parents. That's what the rivalry is.
Yeah.
So if we go in and say, okay, you know, Stacy, you get it this time, and Sarah, you're going to have to wait. Then Stacy's going to be going, mom or dad loves me best. And Sarah's going to be saying, I'm going to get her next time. Right. So it really increases that rivalry when parents make the choice of, you know, when parents are giving out the solution, because it always, you know, hits the siblings against each other, basically.
Right. Yeah. And we can fall into that trap easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. So easily.
We want them to stop fighting.
Yeah.
We're like busy and, you know, we just want like the solution. We don't want to like take that take that time mm-hmm. that we need to go through this. Mm-hmm. But really, like, from what I've seen, you know, with my own kids, like, I would hear my boys and they would be like fighting over like a Lego guy or something. And then I would hear one of them go, how about we do this? And the other one's like, well, how about we do this? That how about with no, you know, with no A in front of it. And they would be kind of going back and forth until they would think of something that worked for both of them, which was amazing, right?
And they feel so, like, when that happens, they genuinely feel so good, right? Like, they feel so good that they've worked it out.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a question, like, because, of course, we're going to make missteps and, like, these days, especially pandemic times, like, parents are stretched thin, overwhelmed, like, their needs aren't being met so well, and it's a whole other subject, but we're going to make mistakes. Oh, and when we do, tell me about what's the best way to go back?
Yeah. So I think, you know, when we always think of in terms of repair, if you realize that maybe you're watching this and you realize, like, oh, geez, like, I'm always going in and you know, protecting the younger sibling from the older sibling. And now I can see ways that I've increased their rivalry, right? I think having a real heartfelt conversation with, you know, say in that example that I just gave with the older sibling, you know, gee, I wonder if sometimes, you know, it's just really hard to be an older brother or older sister. And I'm really sorry if at times I haven't seen it from your perspective. And I know you're such a great kid, and I'm really, you know, I'm going to do something different moving forward. And I just wanted you to know that I could never love anyone more than I love you, right? Because that's the fear. That's the fear. They're always coming in and defending the little sibling against the older sibling, and the older sibling starts to feel like unloved and unseen. And so I think all we can do is try and make a repair and, you know, I admit sounds like a weird word, but like just take responsibility, I guess, for having not been giving the older child the benefit of the doubt and seeing the difficulties for what they were. And instead kind of, you know, really, really, we want to really try and change our, how we see that child.
Yeah. And I would add that this is so important because as a psychologist that works with the adult elder children, and who is one also, I know that what this turns into for many of the older kids is someone who's amazingly competent, amazingly caring, but they actually put their needs so far down, right? Because they're not rewarded and they're not recognized, that it leads to other challenges around the self-care, right? So they can be really confident at helping other people, but that is the conflict that they have around that. So we want to be conveying the message as parents that, no, your needs matter too. There's space for you.
Yeah. And I think you get into the classic over-functioning, under-functioning thing with siblings too, right? Like when, if you've always got the older child who's like, no, you can do it yourself, you know, starting from there, but I'm going to, you know, your younger sibling needs me to do this for them. You know, the older child learns like I'm on my own. So I better, as you mentioned earlier, I better be responsible. I better be looking out for everybody else. And then the younger child doesn't have a chance to step into their own strength. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So good, Sarah. Thank you so much. Okay. So I have some questions that we're asking everybody. I like these tips are just golden. I really want to get your perspective on a couple things. And we're talking about this pandemic. You know, some would say that this is a sign of a major paradigm shift that we're going into globally. And I'm curious to know, what is your hope for how humanity might evolve as a result of this pandemic?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot. And I'm thinking that the slowing down is what I'm hoping that we're really going to be able to take away from this. The not, you know, I mean, from my perspective as a parenting coach, you know, I see so many families that are so overscheduled, and sometimes you can't help that with work or whatever, but you know, then they have like activities every day, every night of the week, and they have their kids in this thing and that thing. And, you know, I love extracurriculars. I'm not saying that nobody should ever do anything, but like, let's slow down a little bit and really ask ourselves, like, this downtime that we've been forced to have, what's the gift there, and how can we carry that forward once things are more open again and we can resume more everyday activities? So how can you sort of bring some of that quiet and white space and downtime into our lives going forward? That's what I'm hoping for people, and for me, myself too, and for my family also. I mean, on the sibling note, my sons they're 16 and 19, and they don't have a lot of common interests. They've always gotten along well, but they don't have a lot of common interests. They are finding common interests during this pandemic. Like, it's great. Like, I haven't seen them this close since they were little boys and playing Lego together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hope that some of that will continue even after they can go out with their friends again. But there are some beautiful things. And I guess I like to think of like the both and, like, you know, we can both be happy to get back to normal life, and we can be carrying some of this stuff forward and appreciating some of this stuff even through the difficulty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Keeping our eyes open now and making that conscious choice. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And you know, you've kind of answered this, but I'll ask it to you. What do you believe we're doing well that makes you feel really hopeful about the future?
I think that people are being thoughtful, and not, you know, I guess I'm seeing that and it's sort of like what I said in the last question, that people are making, they're thinking, how is this going to change my life going forward? Mm-hmm. And that's making me hopeful that it's not, you know, I don't know, the people that I know aren't saying they're going to just rush right out and do everything the same after this, and just be more mm-hmm. thoughtful about how they're living their lives. Yeah. I mean, just on, in terms of like, we can't travel now, you know, maybe we were flying too much. Maybe we were, you know, taking the earth for granted in terms of like the resources that we have, and maybe some mm-hmm. of that's going to shift.
Right. So really the pause, we're asking a lot of questions, we're looking around and getting out of the reactivity so that we're making choices in awareness.
I hope so.
Yeah. Let's hope we continue. And so if there was one thing that you would like our viewers to action today that you believe would make a significant difference for them and their families, what would that be?
Every time there's conflict, to remind yourself they're doing the best they can. And I think that's huge. Like, it's such a, you know, it's six words, but it's six words that have the power to change everything in your life. And I mean, that's what I've found. Those six words of they're doing the best they can brings hope, brings compassion, brings empathy, brings like a working it out spirit instead of a conflict spirit. And so I just would love for people who are watching this, to the next time they feel irritated with somebody, just step back and think, they're doing the best they can, and how can I proceed with that in mind?
Beautiful mantra. They are doing the best that they can. Thank you.
And it's hard. Like, I still, you know, I remind myself of it every time I get annoyed with my husband.
You know, it's like, yeah, I still love you. Sometimes we have to say it for ourselves, right? Most of the time it's for ourselves. Thank you for that. Sarah, you know, this has been so, so helpful. I so love that you always keep it practical, always concrete, that tools that people can use right now, because that's what we really need. I'm sure people watching are going to want to hear more. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
My website is sararosensweet.com, and on there I have ways to get in touch with me. I have lots of free resources. I have a link to join my free Facebook group, which is a wonderful place of so much love and support for parents who are on this journey. So yeah, sararosensweet.com, and there's a lot there, and I'd love to stay in touch with your viewers.
Amazing. Thank you again, Sarah Rosensweet, for all that you're doing, all of your gifts, all of your energy and your passion, and your contribution to making this a more mindful world. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacey.
All right. Take care.